Greetings and salutations from the Agile Podcast, the Agile Revolution, and all the revolutionaries this morning. Tony Ponton here.
Hi, Renee's here.
And Craig's in the house.
He's in the house.
He's also in the dog house.
Is he?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because he didn't interview somebody when he should have.
Yep.
Oh, well, we might talk about that later. I was one of 699 other fanboys.
Okay.
Did you go to somewhere after that, or was it just the case that you were a joint that had lots 690 other?
For those who don't know what the hell Tony's talking about, went to Lean Startup event. We'll talk about that a bit later.
Man, I had to extract that from him.
Lean Startup, yes. So we'll talk about that later.
Feature. Right. So, shall we start the morning? What have you got for us, Renee? Have you got anything?
I've got a post, I guess, which is interesting. It sort of piqued my interest, but what was more interesting was the response to it. So, Alan Shalloway did a post recently on the Agile Manifesto. It's an incredible success and time to move on. And I've done some debate points back into it. But what really piqued my interest was a respondee who was, let's have a find, Paul Osborne. And Paul was saying, I've got my own manifesto. It's called the MUDA Manifesto. Have you heard of it at all?
What?
MUDA?
Yeah. So his manifesto is the simplest thing that works over exhaustive solutions, for failing fast and iterating over making it perfect the first time, creative problem solving over rigid processes and procedures, collaboration and teamwork over specialization and handoffs, and organization empowerment over dependence on supervision.
Nice.
Oh, I like
agree, all of the above.
So we talked about there being seven wastes which the manifesto targets. Three are under the category of doing the wrong thing, so building the wrong thing, for example, gold plating, over-processing and analysing, and making mistakes. And then doing it the wrong way, which is about inefficient processing, context switching and waiting time, and unnecessary handoffs. And lastly, underutilization of capabilities, which is about disempowering of employees. So that was a waste.
Well, that's the legendary eighth waste.
Which one? The disempowering of employees?
Yeah.
So which one did he miss then? Because he's got over-processing, making mistakes, building the wrong thing, or like gold plating.
Yep.
Inefficient processing, context switching, unnecessary handoffs. What has he missed?
I think it's transport someone's missing from there somewhere.
Is that, unnecessary handoffs? Wait time? Is that the wait time of context switching?
Yeah, that's more motion though.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you could.
You cut it any way you can.
I don't know if it was a waste in actually writing the manifesto.
Well, that's right, yeah. So much MUDA, so little time.
I went searching for it on an external site rather than to have to find it in this post, and I couldn't find it, which was, I thought, a waste because it was fairly decent. I'd like to see it somewhere.
All right, one of our listeners, MUDA.org, get onto it.
MUDA.org, tell them.
Well, hopefully Paul will do it.
And then someone matched the seven standard wastes from Lean up to those for us. Do all the legwork for us.
The other thing that really sort of piqued my interest was that building the wrong thing, and it said, for example, goal planning. It's sort of like, and if you take a look at it from a lean startup perspective, it's not necessarily goal planning. It's literally building the wrong thing that no one actually wants.
Well, that's over processing.
Yeah.
Right there.
Okay.
That was very nice. Craig?
I've got a few things this week.
Obviously,
earlier in the week, April 1st, and I don't know whether you noticed, but...
Wait, are you about to give an April Fool's post?
Well, more I just thought this was something very interesting, which David Hussman, who's quite well known in Agile circles, is behind a little publication called The Shallot. Did you see this one?
No, I didn't.
So have you all heard of The Onion, which is the take on...
Okay, great. Hold one moment. There's a very important thing happening here.
No, I just not.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, sir. We have to get our priorities right on the podcast. And caffeine is important. Ready? One, two, three.
Cheers. Keep talking,
all right,
please.
Craig. Oh, dark mother. You've taken my soul again. Yeah, keep going, Craig.
And edit goes here. Probably not. Anyway, so if you've all seen The Onion, which is a satirical take on news, this is the agile satirical take on news called The Shallot. And some of the headlines in this month's publication: Kanban board falls, three injured in daily stand-up. Yeah. Microsoft announces newbie on nails. Failure reaches tipping point. Team succeeds by increasing bug quality. A whole bunch of different things in here. So, for example, the one about the Kanban board failing reads: a Markham, Illinois software development company is reeling after a Kanban board fell during a daily meetup and injured three members. Two programmers and a scrum master were injured slightly when the converted whiteboard fell on them. I guess we overloaded with too many Kanban cards, said product owner Jeremy Arney. Goes on to say, Kanban is an industrial production control system, and Kanban boards hold physical cards that indicate the flow of goods or materials through manufacturing. When asked why a 21st century tool that peaked in popularity in the 1970s and 80s in manufacturing, our reporter was met with blank looks and some puzzling utterance of, it's more agile, and Scrum did not work for us.
Oh. That's very clever.
Very clever. And the bug one is quite good as well. This team introduced the roles of a bug owner, a bug user experience designer, and a bug architect into the team. Developers started test driving the bugs because it makes much more sense than test driving bug-free code.
Where's the bug analyst?
They missed one there, haven't they?
Ooh.
Yeah, so anyway,
what about the bug project manager?
Yeah. Anyway, finally, they said they're measuring the business value of each bug in terms of customer feedback and prioritize the bugs based on the experience we think they create. We can finally say for sure that Agile is a great way of working if you want to create bugs.
So, obviously, normally, the Shallot is not so satirically focused. Is that correct?
No, it comes out once a year.
Oh, once a year it does. Okay, right. Okay.
So you can view this, the shallot.org, you can view this year's and... we also view last year's, but it had a bit of a peak. I was looking at the Twitter stats, virtually no references for about the last 6 months, and then a couple of days around April 1st, absolute peak in popularity. So
here's my problem is people will get a hold of that, and they'll actually think it's real.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Agile Scout did a couple, did one as well. I know Jordan Bortz did another one. And it was a bit weird for me reading them because we read them on the 2nd of April, being produced in the States. So we're like, what's going on here? Oh, yeah, it's April Fool's yesterday.
There's a lot of good ones around.
That's a lot of effort for someone to go to for a...
Yeah, once a year.
Yeah, it's very cute.
What else next. You got, Craig? No, next. You said you had a couple. I do.
So out of the University of Utah, we all know about the wisdom of the crowd. We'll read the book.
Yeah, I read this one, yes.
James Surowiecki.
That's the guy.
I get to forget his name, but I got it today.
So, interestingly, unbeknownst, I guess, to the agile industry at all, the University of Utah has been studying... knowledge and wisdom of the crowd. And what they did is they got a bunch of people together in this study to try and solve a whole bunch of problems. So what they said is that people find they often know more than they think they do. They realize that they may not know the whole answer to the problem. There are a couple of things they do know that might help the group come to a solution. And so they got together 540 students, put them together. They had 270 students working on their own, and they tried to arrive at estimates to get correct answers to questions. Things like the elevation of Utah's King Peak, the weight of the heaviest man in history, population of Utah, maximum driving distance between Salt Lake City and New York City, so all very Utah-based. And what they said is that essentially, when they put these guys together, they got pretty much the right answers. Because people kind of went, I think it's this, I think it's that, and they put it together. But if they didn't get the right answer, they got pretty darn close. Right, so.
Oh. So it's a post that's actually proclaiming the benefit of wisdom of the crowd.
Absolutely.
Because there was a recent one that was actually trashing it.
Yeah, there's been a whole bunch of things about groupthink and stuff that I've seen.
Groupthink.
Floating around here, but they just had these general knowledge questions, and got pretty close to the, you know, in some cases got the right answer, in some cases got pretty close.
But the recent articles that are trashing groupthink are saying that it's inachievable to achieve innovation. So how does it relate to innovation and within the article?
So this doesn't talk about innovation, this talks about arriving at answers.
So this is purely fact-based arrival at answers?
Yeah, but I guess what it's proving is that a whole group of people have different solutions to the problem. So what it wasn't as if someone was just going, you know, heaviest man of all time, and someone would go, I reckon he was pretty heavy, and you know, someone would go, right, I reckon he was 1,000 pounds, and someone would go, well, that's the weight of a truck, and someone would go, yeah, he's heavier than a truck, right? And so that's the kind of process they went through.
But the answer is a fact, right? If you ask how heavy is this bloke, the answer is a fact.
Ultimately.
It's not a creative solution.
True, but that's not what this study was going out
to achieve. So just trying to put it out there that those other studies are still potentially as equally valid.
Potentially, but I think the thing I really liked here is that sometimes, what the study's saying is sometimes you have the smallest snippet of information that you don't think is important to the problem.
Yep.
When you actually put that on the table, that then drives somebody else to think of something. So ultimately, I think even for coming up with good
true,
ideas,
true,
yeah. You know, as long as people feel compelled, they can speak. And there's been another recent article, which I haven't pulled out for this podcast, but about, you know, is Agile stifling introverts? And it's the same type of thing, is that, you know, it's all based around this whole speaking up. So you've got to be, at least have the ability to speak up to be able to get the value out of it.
Yeah, it's one of the articles that I'm referring to, yeah, definitely.
I hate this whole groupthink versus wisdom of the crowd, because there's a big difference between groupthink and the wisdom of the crowd. Groupthink's usually caused by someone trying to lead the wisdom of the crowd. In my experience, you see someone who tries to take the reins of the group, put their idea on the table.
Yeah, you're doing a groupthink right now, dude. We're following you.
See that? You're following me. And you will. No,
I was
processing. Oh, yeah. No, look, it's 1984. You'll do as you're told.
Okay. Yes, Tony.
All right, we're moving on.
Can you talk for a while?
It's my turn, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's okay. I've got one.
Okay.
So I don't know if anyone noticed, but the top 20 most influential agile people list is out again this year.
Yep. Saw that list. Yeah.
Is it based on how many books they've sold? That's all right.
I'll
send
give
it
you
out
the,
to a few people. It was a nice list.
I'll give you the criteria. They've used a combination of statistics from a number of different sites: Amazon book sales, US, UK, and EU, the top 200 agile blogs, Google Insight, trend information, clout data, Twitter numbers, and rankings of the top 100 agile books, which measures the reader's scores, and combine that with a final editorial decision to produce a list of the most influential people in agile. And in the end,
and we're not there, just to clarify.
I was pretty upset. We didn't make the.
We don't write any books at the moment.
Yeah, that's where we went. That's where we went wrong. Maybe we should write a pamphlet.
I like it. Shall I run quickly through the top
20? Yeah, yeah.
So at 20 is Ulrich Nyberg.
Yep, expected.
Everybody knows him pretty much for Scrum in the Trenches.
Scrum in the Trenches.
And his new one, Lean in the Trenches. Yep. Yeah,
and
which
also
is a good
Scrum, and also Scrum and Kanban, making the most of both.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Correct. He is a popular in Scandinavia, apparently, according to this. And he recently led the foreign translation of the Agile Manifesto.
Yes.
There you go.
One of the many.
Cool. So, well, well deserved, I think.
Yep.
James Shaw.
Yep.
So, Art of Agile Development.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The white book with the plant in the front.
Yep.
Yeah. The little plant. It's always easy to remember that one.
That's the one.
Yeah, no, I don't have any anger there.
And he's got a really good series at the moment, Let's Play TDD, video series.
Okay, I like that. Send us the link. We'll put it on the site. We just set him a task. Let's see if he does it.
Tony, you're not one to talk.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Mr. I can't find the file on the USB key when I'm making the podcast.
Oh, yes.
Burn!
Give me a hard time. It wasn't there. We finally got that across the line. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. Lisa Adkins.
So the Agile coaching book.
Probably.
She runs her own
definitely
coaching.
Well deserved. Yep.
Yep.
And one of my great favourites. I love that book. Israel Gatt.
Yes.
So a lot of people may not know Israel Gatt.
Yeah, I know of Israel. I can't think of the book he wrote off the top of my head.
Qatar Consortium Agile Director has led large-scale agile transformation of BMC software and is a self-professed agile executive. His book, The Concise Executive Guide to Agile, has become a bestseller stateside.
Okay, that's why we haven't read it.
haven't heard of him, haven't read it.
No, but obviously Qatar, most people know more. You know, Jim Weissman did a lot of writing for Qatar, so...
Yep.
Well, if it's done one thing, it'll make me go out and get the book and read it now. So we'll see.
Really?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm always up for a new challenge.
Yeah, not sure about that.
I hear the word executive and I go.
Well, maybe this will break the mold.
Maybe. Well, how about you read it and tell me?
Yeah, we expect your book review next podcast.
Hey, one thing, Craig, we know how to stop it now. Executive. There we go. Right. Jim Heisman.
Ah, another executive.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's so far down. It's obviously a signatory to the Agile Manifesto, and
he's quite responsive on Twitter too.
Yeah,
but written a number of books.
Adaptive software development. So on.
I would have been disappointed if he wasn't in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably lower down. He's in ThoughtWorks. Okay, let's move along.
Burn. Burning bridges one by one, Tony.
I've got lots of friends in ThoughtWorks. They know I'm only taking the pee.
He's got his fingers crossed.
Yeah, I have my fingers crossed. Roman Pichler.
Never heard.
So this is one I don't know at all, Craig.
I've come across Roman at Agile conferences past, somewhere on the line, but I wouldn't be able to tell you what his claim to fame is.
So the synopsis of it that they give here is a surprise entrance, so yeah, surprise, but his focus on the product owner has increased his influence in the community. With the leading book on the subject and increasing popular blog, Roman Pichler makes our list. So they didn't tell us what his book was, they didn't tell us what his blog was.
Okay. So I'm none the wiser right now.
So
let's all go Google that later.
We'll go Google that later and find out.
Oh, number, no, not this guy.
Number 14, Alistair Coburn. I think it doesn't need any...
Enough said.
I think we've talked about Alistair. Great. Esther Derby.
Yep.
Retrospectives.
Yeah. But also lots of really good stuff just on teams and
teamwork. Very active on Twitter.
Very responsive on Twitter if you're a Twitterer too. I've had conversations with her before.
And very balanced blog posts if you read her.
Yeah. Always a good one. Scott Ambler.
Interesting.
At number 12.
Very proficient in the community, does a lot of those surveys. Written a couple of books with IBM, heading down the path of his own way now. I can't think of the name of it now. That DA
dad,
yeah, dad thing. Can't remember that.
Disciplined, agile.
That's
delivery.
The one. Yeah.
Waterfall.
Tony is so in burn central right now.
So Tony now has burned ThoughtWorks and IBM.
Oh, again, Scott. You know I'm taking the pick. Okay. That's my job here. I'm meant to be the irreverent one. These two are too serious.
Keep going, Tony.
Mary Poppendick.
Yeah.
Now she's more of a lean person. I'm not sure we can put her in the...
Take her out. Put her in the lean bucket.
How did Tom not get
Agile and lean, there's no similarities. I mean, they're worlds apart.
But how did Tom not get a Guernsey here?
Wherever Mary's mentioned, Tom's just there.
It should have a bracket and Tom after it.
Well, it actually says in the synopsis, Mary and her delightful husband, Tom, introduces to the world of Toyota. I thought that was done a little earlier than that.
Yeah, but she never worked at Toyota, I don't think. She was more 3M and other companies.
Yeah, that's right. So when I read that, I thought, okay. But anyway,
certainly bridged the gap between Agile and Lean and Waste and things like that. Made it more visible in the Agile community.
And all jokes aside, great books. They're
absolutely.
Really, really good
Agile
books.
Agile better.
Yes. And really well explained. Good analogies.
Kent Beck.
Yep.
Father of TDD.
Yep.
XP.
Yes.
All round.
Well deserved. You know.
Hero. Very quiet in the community these days.
He's quite big on Twitter, though.
So.
His Twitter account is very busy.
Yeah, he seems to pop in and out, but I don't think he hasn't anything, you know, in the community in recent years.
Okay.
Jeff Sutherland, the second founder of Scrum.
Co-founder of Scrum, yep.
Yep.
The guy who came behind the guy who created Scrum.
Righto.
Nobody remembers who comes second, dude.
Well, a lot of people don't remember what Beetle is in that, but yeah.
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 Okay. Number 8, Craig Larman. So yes. Again, here's one I've only roughly heard of him.
Yeah,
he wrote the the book about product management, wasn't it?
And how to scale agile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a couple of... His books are actually very good if you're looking for prioritisation and things like that.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of the book, but it's sitting...
Yeah, well, that's an interesting...
On my desk at home, it's got a bone cover, it's very good around the whole...
A little bit disappointed, because both the surprise entrants, they don't give us their blogs, their books or anything, they just got a surprise high entrant. Craig has three titles, all sold reasonably well, which drives his influence, still one of the leading authors on how to scale agile.
Yes, and I will admit his books are good on that topic.
Okay, Ron Jeffries.
What number are we up to?
7.
All right.
7. Ron Jeffries.
Yep.
Yeah. So one of the three founders of the Extreme Programming.
Yep. Yep.
So number 6, Jürgen Apollo.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. So bigger name in Europe than America.
Yep.
Yeah.
Has he written anything?
He's taken the market by storm with his Management 3.0 book.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah, Management 3.0. That one, yeah. He's also been an advocate of the STUS movement,
yep,
so we've talked about that, and Agile Lean Europe.
Yep.
Very good. So,
and he's got he has also released a book called How to Change the World.
Okay.
One post-it note at a time.
Cool. Okay.
Sorry.
Number 5.
I don't know whether it says that, by the way.
Number 5, here we go, is Renee's poster boy, David Anderson.
Yay.
And he's the father of Software Kanban.
Yep.
So there you go. All right. Martin Fowler, number 4.
Mm. Well...
I expected
Martin to be in the top 20, but
true.
I didn't expect him to be in the top 4. But remember the criteria that they judged.
Yeah, certainly Signatory wrote the book on refactoring, very prevalent continuous integration.
Is he active on Twitter?
Yeah, 40,000 Twitter followers.
Yep.
Wow, that's huge.
Yep. One of the most popular in the Agile community.
His blog on particularly development techniques, patterns.
Strong advocate of refactoring.
Yeah, obviously he wrote the refactoring book. And also recently the whole continuous deployment movement. So didn't write the book, but has been plugging that around the country.
So I said, when I read it, I thought, really? But then when I sat back and thought about the criteria, it matches perfectly. Uncle Bob Martin, he's one of my favourites.
Yeah,
Uncle
one of my
Bob.
Heroes.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Still highly
clean. Clean code, the clean coder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're a software developer trying to do Agile, you haven't read his book, just go do it.
Yeah, it's a great book.
JFDI.
And of course, let's see, can you tell me who the number 2 and 1? I'm going to let you have a guess.
Is Ken in there?
You got it. Yeah, number 2 is Ken Schwaber.
Yep.
So, the synopsis is worth reading out. Can I read the synopsis?
Yeah, go for it.
Even with Scrum's market share under attack from those choosing to use Kanban, the highly criticised Scrum Master program, which Ken has replicated, and the controversial resignation, technically caused by a bicycle accident, from the Scrum Alliance, Ken still remains very popular. Behind the original invention of Scrum, he still resonates with a large proportion of the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can't argue with that.
No, it's all good. So that leaves us with one. There can only be one.
Drum roll.
Do you know what it is?
I'm waiting. What do you think it is?
The drum roll.
Mike Cohen.
You got it in one. Had to be Mike Cohen.
Well, sheer books alone would have pushed him through the roof, right?
Yeah, so what it says, well, somebody had to be number 1. And it was a surprise to me the clear winner is not responsible for leading the Scrum or Kanban approaches. Mike Cohen, the Scrum Alliance chairman, author of the multiple leading books on the subject, has been awarded first place in almost every category.
Wow.
So Mike Cohen's go to a conference, you can't get in the room, he's... I can't think of anything that he's actually directly invented, but I think he's very successful at taking concepts and getting them to the masses.
Yeah, he's a community.
Hmm. Yeah. Agile user stories.
Yeah.
Right, everyone was talking about it. Wrote a book. Became the Bible. Planning poker. Right, story points.
Yeah.
Again, invented elsewhere. Took it. Brought it to the masses.
And the reality is, if you have a newbie who comes into the Agile environment and they ask, "What books can I read?"
Yeah.
You know, what are the first books that you immediately roll off the tongue and reel out to them? And, you know, there'll be a Mike Cohen book in that bunch, right?
Yeah, certainly in everyone's top 5, I would suggest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what I really liked about that list, as succinct as it was, and even some of the comments is quite nice because there's a number of names in the comments as well. is that it's a great list to send out to someone who's just starting off Agile. They want to know more about Agile. Who should I potentially follow on Twitter and actually just start being kept up to date? Great list.
Great.
Absolutely. One last one from me, just Jason Little. In, you know, not in the top 20, but Canadian Agile coach, wrote a really interesting post that actually got me thinking, which was, are you Agile or iterative? If you guys saw this one. And what the premise was, he said he was talking to a bunch of colleagues, and they all had similar observations about organizations that consider themselves Agile. And some of the things he was really saying is like, these teams aren't really agile, they're just iterative.
Yeah, they're doing the motions without actually following the values and the principles, right?
So his hook is, there's he's all these teams that call themselves agile, but they're not getting any real benefit from doing the agile practices. So let's see if you recognise any of these types of things.
Yep.
Test is being crammed at the end of the sprint because there is a more clear and stricter enforcement of role separation between programmers and testers. So all the testing being done at the end. Point blame when problems arise, like, well, that's what the product owner wanted, or Joe didn't finish his story so he couldn't do a demo or a showcase.
That's a values thing, yep.
Tend to not deal with uncertainty. Hear things like, we need 2 weeks of research for this, instead of doing minimal planning. Yeah, I think we'd all laugh when we hear these ones.
Every time I've heard that.
Say the word scope creep when Agile teams understand that a sprint is supposed to start with an unfinished spec. Say things like, the process is dot, dot, dot. I don't hear that one all the time.
Individuals and interactions, yep.
Are less likely to experiment with new techniques and practices because Agile may be seen more of a process thing.
Now, I disagree with that one. You can work smarter and better without labelling it.
True, but Agile teams tend to understand that building a learning culture yields great benefits, is what he says.
Okay.
So, if all they see is Agile as being the process thing, then they're not really Agile.
Okay, I agree.
Find problems much later because of the mini waterfall approach. Teams that have hardening sprints, right, so I see that quite often.
What's a hardening sprint?
Hardening sprint is when potentially at the end or on the way through you do a sprint just to fix up the bugs because you've got the stuff where you put a bit of a fudge factor into the schedule.
Checked it, quality issue. Okay. Right.
Have recurring problems and bugs, which lead to constant rework and thrashing. Have less sustainable pace, and come up with retrospective improvements like learn how to estimate better or plan better next time, with nothing tangible to do anything about it. So, not really acting upon their retrospectives. So. Interesting, and I guess I read that and I was thinking about just some of the teams that I've probably worked with in the last 6 months and some of the behaviours, and I could resonate with at least half the things in there of teams and I think it's a good difference, right? If people trying to sell themselves, you can say yeah right, good iterative work, well done, but to be truly agile, you got to take that next level, and it's a good little article to take a look at and
brilliant,
mind yourself.
Okay, so the feature that we wanted to talk about this week was on Lean Startup. I understand Eric Reese was in the country recently, and Craig, you had the privilege and the opportunity to attend. Is that correct?
Yeah, so just happened to be in Sydney, happened to see the event was on, so rejigged the schedule so I could get along there with 700 of my closest friends, so it was a packed out event.
So what was the event itself called?
So it was run by Amazon Web Services, and it was called, wait for it, the Amazon Web Services Regional Premier Lean Startup Event.
Okay. How long was it?
A couple of hours. Two head speakers. So they had the CTO of Amazon out, Dr. Werner Vogels, who was really selling the whole Amazon Web Services thing. He was quite interesting. There was nothing if you'd been around in cloud, you'd know. The one thing I really took away, the kind of the soundbite that he had, is to remember that using cloud or using Amazon Web Services is just as much about scaling down as it's about scaling up.
Right. Yeah.
So people often think of web services as I'm going to build the next Twitter and I'm going to have thousands of hits. But Amazon Web Services is also designed to say, if you're not using it, then you don't need to, you pay us less money.
Yep.
So
Which is exactly, I'm on that. I use that service myself. That's how I host my website. It's great. It's just so easy, and I only pay for the traffic you get. So in my case, I don't pay for anything.
I was going to say it.
No traffic, no bill.
And no bill, that's right. Craig, you'd benefit from it. Anyway.
Oh, that was a... sorry.
Come on, I was quick there.
So he headlined it, obviously, that was fine, but everyone was obviously there to see Eric Ries. I see you guys laughing, I'm ignoring you. So I guess the one thing, if you haven't read the book, go read it.
I've read the book. In fact, I'm almost through it a second time right now.
Yes, I've read it as well.
Yeah, awesome book. It's good. I was kind of a bit stoked. I opened up my book and it's a signed copy, so I don't know how I scored that, but that was pretty cool.
So can I borrow your book for a while and I'll give it back?
Yeah, no. I guess the talk really didn't delve too far away from the book, which is what you'd expect. But I guess the good thing about Eric is he's a inspirational speaker. So yeah, if you hadn't read it, if you didn't come away inspired with some great idea, there's something wrong with you. If you had read the book, it really reiterated, I guess, some of the key points that he was really trying to get across, which, you know, sometimes when you read a book, you don't always pick the things that, you know, they thought were really important.
I've always been curious and I've wanted to ask him, but I've sort of been a little bit too scared. If you read the book, you sort of get the picture that he's a multi-millionaire, potentially from his startup businesses. Is that correct?
Well, so he was very clear to say that, in fact, he was an entrepreneurial failure. And went at lengths to talk about some
but
of the...
But IMVU, is that not a million-dollar company right now?
I don't know about that, but it was a real failure when they kicked that off.
That, yeah.
And he's making his point. That's kind of where he learned, learned the hard lessons.
The inference was he had a lot of failures to get where he got.
Yeah, so quite clearly says, that when they launched that product, 6 months, blood, sweat, and tears to get that product off the line, or at least the original version of it, they brought some kids in, right, and said, we'll pay you, $50 or something to actually trial out our tool. Yeah. First kid walks in, says, oh, we'd like to use a tool. He looked at the tool and said, there's no way I'm using that.
Yeah.
Right. His takeaway is that we couldn't even pay people to use our tool.
Yep.
So, how'd we get the return on that? So, obviously, I think past that point, he's had some successes.
So I sort of suspect he's doing it now for the passion, not for the money.
I think it's probably
a bit of both.
Yeah,
I would suspect he's in a position where he can do it for the passion.
Yeah.
But certainly, you can't deny him. Like, you see some people who write their book and they go on and they're on the circuit. He just had that feel about him. He was a great showman, and if he wasn't passionate about it, he was doing a good job of acting it.
Yeah. Okay.
So, look, I won't go into too much of the detail behind here. If you haven't read it, he talks about his inspiration, which was the movie Ghostbusters, which was the essentially the original entrepreneurship movie. Hadn't really thought about it that way, but he said, it's like any startup, right? They bought the office space, they bought the crappy car, right? We bought the secondhand stuff.
Okay, right.
Worked awesome. In a basement.
Not the movie itself, what happens in the movie. Right, okay.
Yep, and then finally, don't seem
to... There's a whole pile of people that will listen to this that are too young to actually know what Ghostbusters is.
Go out and rent yourself a copy. You can get it for about $2.
Yeah, there's a new version coming out soon too, by the way. Like Ghostbusters 3, isn't it? Or 4.
They're doing a sequel, yeah.
They released a game a couple of years ago. Like any startup, they're on their last couple of dollars and then bang, right? The change in the market happened. Zool turned up and then basically they were on. So I hadn't really thought about that movie in that way, but yeah, it is an entrepreneurial ship.
Just as long as you can.
But they didn't pivot or persevere in order to make that change. That change just happened by chance.
True, but that often that's it's that being in the right place at the right time is what is what causes most things to succeed. He made the point somewhere. I can't find my notes, but successful. It's usually not about you having a successful idea. Like, it's not usually your idea is bad. It's just your, the way that you're enacting
your
on that idea. Which then leads to the whole pivot idea that he has in the book.
You know, I know we haven't talked much about lean startups and what they effectively are, but having a business analysis background and working on so many projects whereby our business SME is not a customer, not a real user of the system, they're a proxy, or even if you have a BA, without even having a business SME, you're twice worse off because you've got two layers between you, the development team, and reality.
And that was his point. This point I hadn't seen anywhere from him before that he made was, because I was quite happy to hear him. He knew what Agile was. Like he was talking
because
about that.
Because some of the earlier projects actually were run using XP.
It doesn't really come out in the book so much. Like, I mean, certainly if you look at the if you look at his loop, it certainly has lots of Agile practices and techniques in there.
He does say it in the book. Yep.
But his point is that Agile only works well if you know who the customer is.
And part of the startup mantra is that you don't necessarily know who your real customer is.
Exactly. So
it's
again,
that layer of uncertainty.
Yeah, so you talked about the loop, and again, I think one of the things that I guess whenever I read this and hearing him speak is I don't think it's too far removed from what we're trying to get, we've all been trying to get to in Agile. It's just another way of talking about it, right?
Yeah.
So he talks about his loop, small batch sizes, and again, that was what we were always trying to strive for.
Agile is a great enabler to lean startups. I don't think you could actually effectively do lean startups without having Agile in place.
And remember when we interviewed Joshua Kreisky earlier in the year, I posed that question to him and never really got a concrete answer on that. But that was exactly my point, is that I don't think lean startup could have been successful if people hadn't already gone through the gone through the Agile.
If we were delivering once every 6 months to production, lean startups would never have happened.
Lean startups would fail miserably in that environment.
So that continuous deployment is a key element to this.
There's probably a point that they don't mention that as much as they could because they want to keep the lean startup type
brand.
Separated from the Agile brand, which is cool. I get that.
They just all work hand in hand, really. So, one builds the other. So, the loop, if you haven't seen it, really short short batch sizes, build, measure, learn, which follows lean, follows Agile, follows XP.
PDC.
Yep.
It's all the way through the loop.
The original delivery engine. Plan, do, check in.
The other thing he said right at the end, which I guess sort of made me think about it, is that, it's hard to believe when you're in no room to move conference hall, 700 people, that even though there was that many people there, lean startup is still early adopter.
I agree, yeah.
Very early adopter. And there's been a lot of buzz in our community around this, and it's hard to...
But the benefit isn't really for us. The benefit is for business.
Well, it's
and customers, really.
But essentially, that's why, particularly when we're in IT, we forget that sometimes.
A lot, yep.
In fact, probably most of the time.
Yep.
So I think that's the thing I really like about the whole startup movement is just getting back to that product-centric model. And again, we were at Yow. Whether people are calling it lean startup, some people are starting to call it continuous design, but it's all that same model, which is getting back to bringing close to your business. And I've just recently been talking to a bunch of Agile teams about different things, and you see that they're being constrained by the fact that their business isn't really involved. So it was interesting at the event, there were certainly lots of startups. It's actually, you saw the number of startups there, and talking to people afterwards, it's like, hey, I'm working for blah blah blah.com. It's like, oh really, what does that do?
Okay, so new business startups, not necessarily inclusive of product startups.
However, lots of enterprises as well, going, hang on a second, this is probably what we need to do to be successful.
The trouble with the enterprises as opposed to the smaller startups that are using it is, one of the big principle there is, and I tweeted something about this, I've shown you just before, the customer tells you what the value is, right?
Yeah.
And that's hard for enterprise.
Absolutely.
It is harder. And you said it before. You know, you've got those separated layers, right? Yeah. Well, it's not just the mindset. It's also the way that the enterprises are set out.
Well, I was going to say it's a HR structure.
Exactly right. Yeah.
The IT team is usually different to the product team.
Absolutely.
And then they've got another team in the middle of them, and then you have to go off to get the deployment, the database, and all those type of things.
Whereas that's why Lean Startup's so powerful in those individual cases, because it puts them that much closer to the customer. And let's face it, in what they're trying to achieve, they have to know what the customer's value is.
And what I want to say is, just because Lean Startup is there doesn't mean that you don't necessarily get rid of those people. Those people's focus changes. So they're no longer generating these random ideas and gathering off these requirements about how to make something perfect. They're actually there analysing data and making sure that the results are what expected, and looking at how we could potentially change our direction strategically.
Yeah, and over the last 6 months, I've seen lots of good examples of organisations who have broken down that barrier and adopting it. I can't say that I've seen any large organisations where their entire model is Lean Startup. So it's a little bit like the Agile movement. It seems to be in pockets, like a department or an area decides that they're going to work closer together and they make it happen. I'm sure that it's where Agile was as well. Started in teams, moved to the enterprise. So
I would imagine some teams will start it in stealth. Some will start saying, "Hey, this is what we're trying," and start promoting it. I know I'm involved in one project at the moment that's just in that early adoption phase and starting to do education to executives about what this actually means whilst the team is working that way.
Yeah. So I guess the wrap up is inspirational. Lots of YouTube videos of him speaking. Seems to be relatively the same type of talk. So you can probably find it.
Yeah.
Lots of places around the web. But if you haven't had a look at the book, or if you haven't, if you don't feel like reading, if you haven't actually just watched one of the videos, well worth to put in your Agile toolkit.
And look, I'd recommend the book.
Yep.
The book is just one of those books when you
read it. A New York Times bestseller last year, right?
Yeah.
It's got lots of examples in it, really useful stuff.
And it's not full of the wank words and all those sorts of things. It really is one of those books that just makes sense when you read it. It all connects the dots. I can let some of that pass because of the way.
Just saying, there's a couple of wank words in there, but
it's not one of those.
But you've got to give it a word anyway.
I mean, pivot is one of those words. That
Okay, Eric.
There was a competition going on Twitter.
These two are burning. You're not
during,
me, right?
During the thing, which was someone would win a prize for the first person for the first time he said the word pivot. And it actually took 27 minutes in before they.
Really? Okay, interesting.
But he was telling the story about Ghostbusters and.
Oh, okay. Right.
And both Ghostbusters didn't have any real pivots in it.
Okay.
Just a lot of perseverance.
Everybody has their little thing, right?
So arguably, they did something different with the Marshmallow Man. They crossed the streams, remember?
Yeah, it's an Agile rule, as we know, never cross the streams.
Yeah, when you've got BAU and production support on your wall, don't cross the streams.
All right, well, thank you for listening to the podcast today. If you have any questions, comments or feedback, you can send them to theagilerevolution.com.
And
we eventually get an email.
We've come from
the Agile podcast. Oh my gosh.
We've come from our favourite coffee shop today. We'll give it a bit of a plug. Brew down in the lurking depths of Brisbane.
Bug house.
Great coffee. Great place. That should get us some free coffee somewhere.
No, I
don't.
Do they have a Twitter account?
Surely.
They should. We'll have to find
a
Twitter.
We'll link on there. We'll get them some traffic.
We'll get them some traffic. And just a little quote for the day. A friend of mine just said it. Just remember, if you see a bunny rabbit laying brown eggs today, they're not chocolate.
Ooh.
Happy Easter.
Viva la revolution.
Viva la revolution.
Viva la revolution.